Columbia's information superhighway. This is The Drive with Derek Gilbert. Your city, your station, the Eagle 93.9.
Oh, yeah. I figure we're within a couple of days of Christmas now, we can start breaking out some of the Christmas-themed music. Although, that went through Justin for a loop. What is that? The Ventures, it sounds like? Hawaii 5-0 theme, maybe? Tomorrow, we're going to go totally Christmas here on The Drive. We've got the curator of the Christmas Story Museum. Brian Jones is his name. He set up a museum to the movie A Christmas Story. You'll shoot your eye out, kid! And we'll talk with him tomorrow after 5:30. And then at 6, we've got the official historian and biographer for the Rankin Bass Company. Those are the guys that produced all those great animated Christmas specials. Back in the 70s, A Year Without a Santa Claus, Santa Claus is Coming to Town, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And we will talk with Rick Goldschmidt tomorrow at 6 o'clock. We've also got some in-studio Christmas caroling tomorrow. The Barbershop Quartet, Dogs Without Leashes, will be here tomorrow to carol with us, and I might even get to blow off the dust that is collected on my pitch pipe, lo, these many years. All that tomorrow after 5 o'clock here on The Drive on the Eagle 93.9. Now, we welcome to our microphones the publisher of the popular online news magazine Raiders News Network, RaidersNewsNetwork.com. He's the author of a number of books. His most recent, the supernatural thriller The Ahriman Gate. He's also a frequent guest with George Norrie on Coast to Coast AM, which you will hear tonight after midnight on the Eagle 93.9. Futurist, how's that for a description? Tom Horn. Tom, welcome to the Eagle 93.9.
Yeah, well, thank you, Derek. I guess I could, you just add anything you want to my name. I don't care. And I think you're right. I think that was the Ventures.
It sure sounds like their stuff, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Well, Tom, we had an interview with Wesley J. Smith about a week or so ago, and talked about the transhuman movement, which is something I know you've been watching and writing about for a long, long time, and knew that we needed to get you on to discuss this and where it might go. Because I think it's already farther along than most people realize.
Yes.
For people who might have missed the interview with Wesley J. Smith, in a nutshell, what is the transhuman movement?
Well, transhumanism is, it's this emergent philosophy that's supported by a growing body of academics who favor the use of science and technology, especially neurotechnology, biotechnology, and nanotech, to overcome human limitations and to improve, surpass the limitations of the human condition, live longer lives, and be able to do things that are outside of the normal, sphere of what it means to be a human right now. They're interested in everything from space migration to mind uploading. All of that is a catalyst for the next phase in human evolution. And these people are not to be discounted. I mean, they're among some of the brilliant. They're among, the fellows and the PhDs that are teaching at some of our leading institutions, and they believe that the future of the human race is to move beyond the current modalities as we understand them.
Now, looking at this from somebody from the standpoint of somebody who's got a family member, I'm just saying theoretically here, if someone were to have a family member with a degenerative disease, whether it be Alzheimer's or what have you, this transhuman movement sounds like it might hold promise for future cures, overcoming the limitations of our flesh. What's wrong with this transhuman movement?
Well, and that's the way that it is being sold. Everything from stem cell science and research right now, it's all being wrapped up in this nice package about producing cures for what ails us and extending our lives. And I often say to people, I'm not a technophobe, and I certainly want to live as long as I can. I mean, I don't have an interest in walking out in front of a big tall bus right now. And I would say that people in Missouri are aware of where some of these questions can go. The whole issue of human cloning, for instance, as it relates to stem cell research, because of Amendment 2, which was approved by voters in November.
Mm-hmm.
But in leading up to all of that, the midterm elections, like the Elliott Institute, they did a lot of research, and they were actually hoping to have a constitutional amendment before the voters prohibiting much of the research. And they didn't get it all done in time. But, I mean, their findings, they listed some of the findings that go directly to your question about, what would be wrong with engineering a human species so that it can be healthier, live longer, And they were talking about scientific discoveries and advances in genetic engineering, making it possible to clone humans for so that we can use the product from these cloned humans in order to generate different kinds of medicines and whatever, you know, to provide a better future for the rest of us.
In other words, farming and harvesting embryos.
Farming and harvesting embryos. And as you know, I started doing research into this biotech, as you said, maybe, well, it was over a decade ago now, and then I got really intense about it 7 or 8 years ago when I was working towards writing that book you mentioned. But look, I think for me the gateway now to appropriate social discourse on the issue of transhumanist values and biotechnology and genetic modification and is this good for everybody and how it's being sold for its medicinal purposes and its life enhancing purposes. I think, frankly, that much of the discussion about this has come a bit late. The technology involving genetics took off back in the 70s and 80s when most people weren't even paying any attention to companies like Genentech and Biogen and Genex, and they were getting research grants from the federal government and also from private funds to study how genetic modification might find applications in the industry and as well as in healthcare, and for that matter, as well as military applications. And by the time the president, you know, a year and a half ago, in his State of the Union address, started calling for legislation to limit or outlaw certain parts of this field of science, in particular the production of animal humans and human animals, it all came late. At Oxford University this year, they held the first World Forum on Human Enhancement, and they talked about the inevitability of re-engineering the human body so that we can live longer, you know, fly straighter, have super intelligence and through the uses of transgenics, whatever. Right after that, in May of this year, the Human Enhancement Tech and Human Rights Conference was held at Stanford University Law School in California, where different bioethicists and transhumanists and legal scholars and even political activists came together, and they were talking about, you know, future humans and asking some of these questions like what's wrong with you know, using a kind of a new blended flavored species, if you will, enhancing ourselves through expanding our modalities so that we can see better, live longer, and if that means that we have to cross over certain barriers where we begin tinkering with the distinctiveness of human DNA through, you know, using animal or plant byproduct or whatever, even new synthetic life forms that they're creating, then what's wrong with doing that? And they discussed all of that at these universities this year and began defining what the civil rights of these enhanced or post-humans are going to be. One of the most interesting things that they talked about at the Stanford University, which was really passed over, and I read nothing about it in the news, but they were talking about if human embryonic stem cells are injected into an animal embryo very early in its development, then the human cells would spread through every organ system in that animal embryo. Conversely, they were saying that animal embryonic stem cells might do the same thing in a human, and that you wind up with these species that could have human intelligence, but the integration of the other DNA from an alien species could be thoroughly saturated without that species, and they might even carry through physical features and behaviors that would be either distinctly human or distinctly animal.
We'll need to hold for just a second there while we take a quick break. Tom, see, this is what happens. We get a studio where I have to face the other direction from Justin. So when I point, I have to be careful to point in the right way. Otherwise, we get our signals crossed. We're talking with author, researcher, and futurist Tom Horn about the transhumanist movement. He also used the phrase post-human. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And what the government expects for its grant money. There's always a quid pro quo. I'm Derek Gilbert. This is The Drive on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
The Drive with Derek Gilbert. Your city, your station. The Eagle 93.9.
Final Friday before Christmas tomorrow. You want to find out what the day is going to be like and whether there are obstacles in your path. Make sure you're listening to Tim Murphy in the early morning. Tomorrow, he's got the weather and Eagle Eye traffic every 10 minutes on the 10s. And, of course, latest news from Shelley Tucker all morning on the Eagle 93.9. We're talking with author and futurist Tom Horn about the transhumanist movement. And, Tom, just before the break, you were talking about these groups of scholars and legal minds that were getting together to discuss the rights of transgenic, chimeric creations, post-human creatures. Do I have that right? And if so,
yeah, you do.
Does that mean then they fully intend to start creating these transgenic species?
Well, they fully see that is the future of the human race, that they see these as basic human rights, that who is the government or anybody else to tell an individual that if technology would allow them to enhance themselves, that this is an individual human right, and that the technology, if they can pay for it, certainly should be afforded to them to extend the length of their life or to give themselves greater capacity, greater strength to be able. There's a physicist out of the UK now that's talking about developing fourth dimensional perception for transhumanist species.
Uh-huh.
And all of this is opening this door to that conversation that you had with Wesley Smith. This important question that transhumanists are for and others are a little bit afraid of, like Wesley, who you talked to when he was explaining his concerns about the philosophical question of human exceptionalism. And Wesley believes, as do many, as well as myself, that that's going to be the moral issue of the 21st century, that this definition of what does it mean to be a human is going to be at the forefront of legal scholars, of legislation, and that's why these legal institutions see themselves right now as having a responsibility to get ahead of the eight ball and begin discussing what are going to be the rights and privileges of those who are enhanced humans. Do you have to have a mother and a father to be a human? If you're part ape, are you protected under the Constitution? These are questions that legal minds have to debate. The Birkbeck Law School in the United Kingdom that prepares people who enter into the CSI fields for studying crime scene analysis have already started a new department in their school in talking about how you interrogate and develop how do you study a crime scene that might have been committed by something that's only part human, because all of the rules that we've developed over the last few decades might not apply to something that's part wolf. It might instinctively be something different than we are aware of. And so all of the legal minds and the government and there are places in the world that are already passing laws. Australia just did, where they can create human chimeric embryos for research purposes. So I think ultimately everybody knows where this is going to go, and the very first thing out of the gate that's of great interest to people like me is this question of determining what it means to be a human, because there are certain rules about what it means to be a human that are implied. They are assumed within our constitutional rights, and once you pass over, once you step through those to redefine what it means to be a human in some other way, it might open the door to things like eugenics and Nazism and things like that. That the sanctity, the equality of life ethic, and you're familiar with that term,
mm-hmm.
has been for several decades what has held that all human beings have equal moral worth, regardless of their ability, of their capabilities. Even if they're handicapped, they have equal moral worth. And that's been the objective standard, Derek, and that's being threatened now by what's called personhood theory. And personhood theory holds that rights would only belong to so-called persons, which in transhumanist circles is a status that's earned by certain kinds of cognitive capability. And if personhood theory ever supplanted the sanctity of life, then it would open the door for things like harvesting organs from people like Terry Schiavo, permitting biotechnologists to farm cloned fetuses for use in drug testing and experiments in genetic engineering, which they're already doing in a couple of other countries, and probably ultimately will wind up happening here in the United States as well. couple of months ago, I was actually on Change Surfer Radio with transhumanist James Hughes, who's one of the leading transhumanists. And we were talking about this very issue. And Hughes, you may know this already, but he advocates uplifting chimpanzees and great apes genetically so that they would have at least nominal human intellectual capabilities. And he wants to do that as a way of proving that personhood and not humanness is what ought to be used as the ticket for citizenship and protection under the Constitution. And by doing that, also, therefore, then open the gateway for them to be able to use this technology to improve themselves so that they can begin advocating the creation of a post-human species, which would include using things like animal genes in our progeny in order to increase our strength, make us more acute, whatever. And so, first and foremost, what we're witnessing, Derek, is an important battle between two world views. There are those who are of the early American, older Judeo-Christian, and for that matter even Islamic ethic, that believes that human life is inviolable, that it is sacred. And then there are those now of this new eugenic ethic, of the transhumanist view, that human life is really simply kind of a complex form of matter that can be ethically manipulated, re-engineered into something brand new, the very next phase in our human evolution. And for proponents of that new transhumanist ethic, the quantity and the quality of humankind not only can but ought to be manipulated in order to benefit the individuals in terms of life extension and enhancement of our species. And it's something that I have to tell you, people need to understand that this point of view is not something that's relegated to the lunatic fringe. These are some of the leading thinkers in our leading schools and universities now, and among the elite and the wealthy and even members of the government, it's prevailing among them. It certainly was evident when I was on James Hughes' show, and something you might find interesting is that both he and I agreed that we are living on the edge now of post-humanity. I would almost guarantee you that not one decade now is going to pass before humans, as we know them, are no longer the sole higher intelligent occupiers of planet Earth.
That is a bold statement. That is a bold statement. Tom Horn is our guest on the Eagle 93.9. We're talking about transhumanism. Tom, now, what then is next? The transhuman movement goes to what? Posthumanism? And what is that?
Well, a couple of things, post-humanism, it actually, the technology is already doing several things that powerful people in government and elsewhere are interested in. Number one, opening the door to a new kind of eugenics. Secondly, creating an interest in exotic weapons and soldier technology. And thirdly, slowly it's given way to this transhumanist vision of where humans in the near future will be dramatically enhanced so that they possess a power and ability, lifespans and health, and even things like this, this one physicist is talking about multi-dimensional perception and things like telekinesis. Here's the thing. This is a radical idea, and you said I went out on a limb, and I did. National Geographic magazine, Discover magazine in their December issue, all of these people who hire these great thinkers to try to, you call me a futurist, to be able to predict, what's coming around, all of them are saying this is inevitable. It's inevitable. We're past the point of whether or not it's going to happen. We're at a point now where, when is it going to happen? And among some camps, they see it as a dramatic step forward, the next step in human evolution. And then among other camps, we don't know what it means, but we see it as a Pandora's box at a minimum, a giant step backward at a minimum, chaos, simply because you can already see the ramifications in genetically modified crops. that when you start tinkering with complex living organisms and you change them in ways that are not predictable, they do things that you can't forecast, and they can affect everything from the environment to the health of the people and the species that are living around them in ways that could throw off the balance of nature. And yet we're already doing this with genetically modified crops, and we are going to do this with genetically modified humans. We're already genetically modifying humans at the embryonic level, and so the next phase is simply, once we've perfected some of these tools, to take it to the next level. You mentioned RaidersNewsNetwork.com, my website. Mm-hmm. You might have read there this just maybe two or three days ago, where the John Templeton Foundation now has provided $500,000 to Arizona State University for a whole series of lectures to evaluate what they are calling the fact that we have now embarked on what they call large-scale genetic and neurological re-engineering of the human species, the next chapter in evolution. I'm actually reading their pages. I'm saying that.
Wow.
And they see this as the result, of course, of the accelerated developments in the fields of genomics and stem cell research and genetic enhancement, germline engineering, neuropharmacology, nanotechnology, and so on.
It is a brave new world, and Tom, we'll continue our conversation here in just a moment.
Live, local, listening to you. The Drive with Derek Gilbert. Your city, your station. The Eagle 93.9.
And if this conversation with Tom Horn isn't enough to get your blood moving, stick around a little bit. Michael Savage and the Savage Nation after 7 o'clock. Neil Bortz at 9 o'clock tonight, and then tonight at midnight. George Norrie with Coast to Coast AM. He's going to talk with author Steve Alton about the Mayan calendar's 2,000-year-old prophecy that the world is going to end exactly 6 years from today. December 21st, 2012, the world ends according to the Mayans. So all that is coming up tonight on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com. Now we rejoin our guest Tom Horn. He's an author, futurist, and the editor, publisher of the popular online news site, RaidersNewsNetwork.com. We are taking your calls now at 874-9390, 573-874-9390, if you're listening to the internet stream at the Eagle939.com. We're talking about transhumanism and where the species is going and who is pushing us in this direction. We do have Melissa online in Columbia. Melissa, thanks for listening. You're on the Eagle 93.9 with Tom Horn.
Hi, you forgot about the omega-3 pigs that we have here in Missouri.
Oh, yeah, that was just a news item released today. Yeah, we've got pigs with healthy fat.
Yeah, one thing I thought about is, you know, if they're planning on uplifting a species of animals, maybe they shouldn't uplift animals that could so easily kill us as they are now. I mean, you know, you hear about chimp attacks and, you know, that they have to keep these adult chimps that have been retired from show business and research safe, you know, so that they don't attack us. I think they ought to uplift something like dolphins that, you know, won't kill us and eat us if they have a chance.
Good point, Melissa.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for your call. But the point of uplifting, Tom, is a key question. The government, as you pointed out, has been financing this research. What interest will the government have in uplifting the human species?
Well, they have a strong interest in uplifting the species. Part of it is a military application. Institute of Health, as you know, this year gave $773,000 to Case Law School in Cleveland specifically, and people can look this up, go to Google and look this up and verify what I'm saying, specifically for the developing of the guidelines that will be used with human subjects. This isn't even being done with computers and animals. This is being done with human subjects, and the whole almost nearly $1 million for this case study is to be done over the next 24 months for one purpose only, and that's to develop the guidelines that will be used for enhancing the human species. And there is the law professor there, he's a bioethicist by the name of Max Melhelm, who's leading these professors and physicians and bioethicists in this 2-year, which is now about 18 months left, project aimed at developing the guidelines for altering the human species through genetic enhancement. Now, you know, The president's own former counsel on bioethics, Leon Kass, talked about some of the military applications. He wrote a book people ought to read. It's called Life, Liberty, and the Defense of Dignity, The Challenges of Bioethics. And in that book, he talks about how human nature is literally now on the operating table and ready for alteration, and who is it that's interested in it. He talks about the military, he talks about eugenics, he talks about neurophysic enhancement, he talks about wholesale redesign of the human species, and at the end he actually ends the book saying anybody that cares about preserving humanity had better wake up and start paying attention, because it's on the operating table now. And this guy knows what he's talking about, because he was the chairman for the council's, for the president's Council on Bioethics, and reviewed not only all of the technology and where it's taking it and taking us and who's funding it, but why and where they intend for us to wind up with it. And
we got a caller here coming in at 874-9390. I hate to interrupt, Tom, but we've got Pam, who's right, holding on from Harrisburg. Pam, welcome to the Eagle 93.9. You're on with Tom Horn.
Hi. Before we have a knee-jerk reaction to, you know, being scared of all of this, maybe we need to boil it down to something a little more easy. What is sentient? You know, what is the definition of sentient? And maybe we should consider protecting those that are sentient at whatever level. You know, if, heaven forbid, somebody, well, they're going to do it. You know, scientists, people, we can't help but mess with stuff. Maybe we need to think of it as, all right, what is the definition of sentient and the protection of sentient beings, period.
Pam, would you say then that there are some humans that are not sentient?
What is the actual definition of sentient?
No, good question.
You know, that I think is a more, you know, is it possible to be a human being and not be sentient? I guess if you're in a vegetative state, but that doesn't mean that you weren't at one point sentient and have become into a place where you cannot be protected. You know, you can't protect yourself, and we need to, as a whole, protect you.
Now, Pam, this sounds a lot like the personhood theory that Tom was talking about.
It probably is. I've only just now gotten into the car and heard some of this.
Okay.
But it sounds like we're going to have to stop basing it on being human and, you know, basing it on what is sentient and what is the definition of it.
All right. Well, thanks for your call, Pam. I appreciate that.
All right.
And by the way, I would point out, Pam, I'll point out very quickly, Pam, that you can catch the early part of the interview on the Eagle 93.9 podcast at the website later tonight. Tom, your comments.
Well, I mean, she is certainly pointing out some of the ethics, some of the questions, some of the philosophical questions that need to be discussed and that are being discussed right now. And she's using a different kind of descriptive language, essentially, though, to say the same thing as personhood theory, that instead of saying that humans have exceptional value, as Wesley would argue, mm-hmm. Because we are what we are, that we were designed by God, in other words, if you want to get to the big question, and that the new transhumanist movement has an entirely different kind of an ethic. And I got to tell you that in a way we're already seeing the kind of social attitudes that it would take for this new transhumanist eugenics to flourish throughout parts of the world. You only have to walk over certain boundaries. It only takes a couple of small legal definitions that the public would buy, where life itself is lowered from human exceptionalism to being nothing more than a commodity that can be used and harvested for spare parts or whatever else, if we find that life is valued in a way different than what we have been valuing it, at least for the last few decades. You look at the story out of the Ukraine. Did you see the story where these
yes.
healthy babies
being harvested for their stem cells? Correct, yeah.
Harvested after their stem cells. This is a black market that's growing as a result of a change in the way we value what it means to be a human. You couple that with these constant reports that have been coming out for the last 2 or 3 years out of China, where they're harvesting the organs from poor people and also prisoners to sell to these rich people who need organ donors or whatever. And then on a completely different level, even euthanasia is gaining ground, which is, I think, mirroring changes in, in global opinions about the value of life and what it means to be a human. And the startling thing, like out of the UK, even the Church of England and the Christian Medical Fellowship in England have come out now in support of legal euthanasia with regard to disabled children. And if you go and read their arguments, I mean, they just say that active euthanasia ought to be considered, and they say that it ought to be considered for the good of the family as a whole in order to spare parents the emotional burden and financial stress of caring for sick infants.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that illustrates, in my opinion, a change in the way people value what it means to be a human.
We'll try to squeeze in another call here before we go to break, Tom. We've got Jim, who's holding on the line from Centralia. Jim, welcome to the Eagle 93.9, and you're here with Tom Horn.
Hi. I was interested in hearing some of the scenarios that Mr. Horn could describe as how this would be implemented. How would it affect people who would we have a free will, free choice as to whether to partake in these programs, or would it be something they would talk groups of people into, and then it would eventually breed into the human race? Or just to kind of hear how this kind of plays out in some of the scenarios of how it would affect our rights to choose whether we would partake or not partake in some kind of transhuman process.
Good question, Jim.
This whole process is opening so many questions. Now, the privilege to choose or to refuse to be enhanced is certainly something that even the members of the transhumanist community are at the forefront of saying that they want to protect the right of the individual. Mostly that's what they're about. But what happens as a result of eugenics, you can start creating various kinds of classes of people, so that all of a sudden you have specialized humans who are designed now to undertake, let's say, dangerous environmental or combat situations, which is one of the things that the military is looking at. And so you create a class of people over here who have an entirely different kind of set of rules. You create a genetically superior super race, let's say, with the concurrent elimination of genetically distinct groups of people who are average or sub-average human beings who... some of the proponents of human engineering are actually talking about right now as being genetically inferior. So what happens is you lower the perception of intrinsic human worth. This is what happened during Nazi Germany. And that opens the door for a misuse of science and law that the public now has bought into, that can start creating a misuse of certain people that we determine don't have the same material worth as we do. And so you have medical experiments that are being carried out by Nazis and Japanese doctors during World War II. And it happens because if life is not rated as intrinsically special, as sacrosanct, then there's no cultural barrier to eventually doing things like harvesting organs from people that we consider to have either no or lesser value than the rest of us do, and therefore in order to provide the parts and pieces that we need to maintain our superior status, we're willing to use their lives. And that's exactly what's happening at an embryonic level right now. And then the big question comes in, Derek, and this is the excuse me, this is the Orwellian question. Who, then, is it that begins determining which citizens are worth less and which ones are worth more? And that leads directly to eugenics.
That is exactly the point. Our guest is Tom Horn. He is the publisher of the website RaidersNewsNetwork.com. He's also the author of the recent supernatural thriller, The Ahriman Gate. And again, a frequent guest of George Norrie on Coast to Coast AM. Our conversation continues, and there's still time for you to get in with your call and question at 874-9390. I'm Derek Gilbert. This is The Drive on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
The Drive with Derek Gilbert. Your city, your station. The Eagle 93.9.
Monday, we're going to do something special here. Christmas Day, in place of Tim Murphy's program in the early morning and The Drive here in the afternoon, we're going to feature 2 hours of radio drama, 1947 production of It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed, the 1948 production of Miracle on 34th Street with Maureen O'Hara and Edmund Gwenn. Back-to-back, you'll hear the Christmas morning, 6 o'clock to 8 a.m., and Christmas afternoon between 5 and 7 here on the Eagle 93.9. So tune in for that if you happen to be near a radio and feeling like something a little different on your Christmas day. Tom Horn, author and futurist, has joined us to talk about transhumanism, and just a few minutes left. But, Tom, you mentioned something right before the break that I think is an important enough point to repeat, and that is if we get into a case a situation where the government is actively promoting genetic manipulation for the good of the public health, or to just as they do with vaccines, we may find ourselves in a situation where there are government agencies devoted to deciding who gets enhanced and who does not. Now, is that overreacting to this movement, Tom? Am I you know, being a Luddite here or freaking out?
No, because, you know, it's the drip, drip, drip. It's not what happens. It's not what happens today. It's what happens in the future through these small decisions that we make, and how that over a slow period of time, the public is brought to a point where they're willing to accept things that they wouldn't accept outright when it's first proposed. That's the reason I mentioned Leon Cass earlier, who wrote Life, Liberty, and the Defense of Dignity, and he warned that biotechnology, combined with transhumanist aspirations, are ultimately going to enshrine things like eugenics, because he said that the goal, and this is true on the surface, the goal of transhumanism is the creation of a superior human. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, was the goal of Hitler, to use eugenics to create a superior man, the Übermensch. And for people to think that that might be a stretch of the imagination, I would tell them, to go over to the Elliott Institute and read some of the comments that have been they've done a good job there of collecting the comments that have been made by some of the leaders now in this new eugenics, like Dr. Joseph Fletcher had said chimeras or parahumans might legitimately be fashioned to do dangerous or demeaning jobs, because as it is now, low grade work is shoved off on moronic and retarded individuals, the victims of uncontrolled reproduction. Should we not program such workers thoughtfully instead of accidentally by means of hybridization? He actually wrote that. And they've done a great job of collecting a dozen different leaders in transhumanism now, and who have said equal things. Dr. Francis Crick, who is a Nobel Prize laureate, who actually was a co-discoverer of DNA, said no newborn infant should be declared human until it has passed certain tests regarding its genetic endowment, and that if it fails these tests, it forfeits the right to live.
In other words, the test of sentience, as opposed to the test of whether or not it is genetically human and worth living, just simply because it is human.
And it even is worse than that. I mean, James Watson, who's the president of the Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory in New York, he's also a Nobel Prize laureate and a co-discoverer of DNA, in an article where he was advocating for a manipulation of the human genome. He said, if you're really stupid, I would call that a disease, so I'd like to get rid of that. People say it would be terrible if we made all girls pretty. I think it would be great, end quote. So,
yeah, this is the future we're looking for. Tom, sadly, we've run out out of time. This hour has passed by much too quickly. We'll need to talk again soon because, again, I believe this is, if not the
Send
most important topic
to Italy for the holiday.
Facing us as we move into the 21st century. Boy, it's right up there at the top of the list.
Tom, well, and the conversation needs to go to the military the next time.
Yes, absolutely. Tom's website where he tracks stories on a regular basis, RaidersNewsNetwork.com. Tom, Merry Christmas to you and your wife, and we look forward to talking to you again in the new year.
Merry Christmas to you, Derek. Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, greatly appreciated. Tomorrow, the Total Christmas Show, caroling, A Christmas Story, and You'll Shoot Your Eye Out, Kid. All that on The Drive tomorrow afternoon on the Eagle 93.9.